Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, don't you just love snakes? You know, those kind of slippery, curling type that'll wrap themselves around you if you give them a chance. Don't you just love that? Doesn't it make you feel loved? Well, maybe. And some of us feel that way about snakes, and others are quite frightened, but understandably so, because snakes can be frightening. So to help us understand about this world of snakes is the author of a wonderful book called Awakening the Ancient Power of Snake, Transformation, Healing, and Enlightenment. And the author actually has been on our show before with a show we did about polar bears. So now we're going to get a little bit closer to the ground, although polar bears can get deep into the ground too. And I'm so happy to have Dawn Bauman Brunke here again to talk with us. Dawn, welcome back to Energy Stew.
Hey, thanks, Peter. Thanks for having me again. I always really enjoy talking with you.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, snakes are an unusual subject for a lot of people who don't want to know about them.
Yeah.
And why so? What do you think they can? I mean, we certainly can understand their fears, right?
Sure. Yeah. And we can understand their fears. You know, you can die from a snake bite. In the United States, I think only 5 people a year, actually, that happens to, because we have antivenins and, you know, you're not likely, with the exception of a few areas of meeting snakes. Now, that number is much higher in places like India, you know, but that aside, I think one of the reasons we have kind of a bad attitude about snakes is the way they're portrayed culturally. You know, I mean, there's a lot of animals that can kill us a lot more easy than a snake. And yet snake is one of the top 3 phobias that people worldwide have, even in lands where there's no snakes whatsoever. So how do we explain that, right?
I think it's because of how they live, that they live in and on, you know, they move through underground and overground and you know, they're mysterious.
And they are mysterious. Yes. Yeah, that's another reason, I think. They hold a mystery that I think that frightens us at some levels.
Yes. And their eyes don't blink. So when they're staring at us, oh my gosh, what's going on? And they also know how to rise up and act threatening or rattle their tails.
Right.
And so they know how to, you know, warn us and protect themselves. It makes sense that they can behave in ways that can be very frightening. But then again, how many snakes are actually venomous?
A really small percentage. I think there's 3,500 plus species of snakes, and there's maybe a couple hundred that are venomous. You know, and of those, even a smaller amount venomous that will actually kill. You know, that some snakes can be mildly venomous to humans. You can get bit with venom, envenomated, and you'll survive. Not all, of course. There's some that are really deadly. But there's another side to this, isn't there, about venom? Let's just maybe go into venom for a moment, because a lot of our Western drugs are derived from snake venom. Not many people know that, right?
Wow.
So, venom can be a poison, but it can be a healing agent as well. And I think that's part of the mystery of snake. You know, it has both this dangerous aspect of a kind of a destroyer, but it has a very positive healing aspect to it. And some of the earliest images of snake really were as creator gods. If you go to our earliest mythology, that's where you see snake represented as a creator.
But what about the caduceus?
Right. Well, okay, that comes later. Yeah. But I mean, much earlier than that, like, let's look at Kundalini, for example, the snake within, right? Kundalini is known as the sleeping serpent. And it's an ancient, Indian or that area of understanding subtle energies of the body that move, that are based kind of at the root chakra, and when awakened, will move up to the crown and awaken people. And that's a powerful thing, isn't it? So, again,
Especially for those who've had Kundalini experiences.
right. It can be awakening. If it's awakened too soon, it can be dangerous. It can be frightening. So there's this dual nature to snake, and I think that's part of its mystery, part of its power, part of its fascination for us, for many of us.
Right, and there are many people who are comfortably attuned, and like I have a 6-year-old granddaughter. Who I have actually a picture of her holding a very big, heavy snake wrapped around her, and she's smiling very happily.
Right. Sometimes young children, they haven't bought into that whole cultural thing that we have about fearing snakes. So snakes are amazing. I don't know if you ever have you held a snake, because they're
Oh,
actually
yeah.
amazing, the way they move and the way they connect with you. And there's just so much about snake. But let's just bring it back to, I think, the phobia against snake. Just like most phobias, they're based on they're based on ignorance. We don't know a lot about snake, and so or a person doesn't, and so they project this fear about snake. Snakes are, a lot of people say snakes are slimy, which is hilarious, because if you've ever held a snake, it's not slimy. They're very smooth. They're satiny, silky. Their scales are silky like, right, as they move over
I
you.
might call them slippery.
They can be slippery a little,
Yeah.
yeah. My experience is more silky and more they're usually dry. But anyway, why does snake hold such a fear for so many people? I think the answer is that it's in our culture. It's in the way we see things from a lot of different angles, from the basics of, being able to, or the possibility of dying from a snake bite, to religion. Snake got a really bad rap in the Christian story
Oh,
of the
right,
Garden
the
of
Garden of
Eden, right?
Eden. Wow. Sure.
That was a pretty heavy duty one. Joseph Campbell notes that as, he studies mythologies, and up until that point, he said snake was an advisor, a creator god, a protector.
The
Gods and
Guardian.
goddesses wanted to be near snake because snake gave such great wisdom. Its eyes were always open, so it was all seeing. It was connected with prophecy and gifts of intuition. We see it on the head of the uraeus, the Egyptian headband that pharaohs and people in power wore, because it awakens our insight, our third eye. That's
That's
a wild
beautiful.
energy. That's a very powerful energy. And I think at some level, the powers that be didn't want humans to know all about that, So there was an agenda to demonize snake.
Yeah, and the Garden of
There
Eden
really was.
story is a big one.
Yeah.
But snakes do represent our deepest consciousness. And so there is maybe in many people this unconscious knowing of snakes. And their mystery is the mystery of our own minds.
I agree. I think at the core root, our fear of snake is fear of the power we have within ourselves. It really is.
Well said. So we need to release this fear, it may be in ways that releases ourselves.
I mean, the book I wrote right after Snake was, excuse me, called Shadow Animals. And it had to do with this aspect of, how we project our fears onto certain animals, and how those animals, once we kind of open ourselves to that, how those are the animals that have something to teach us. When I worked with this book, writing the snake book, I learned so much from snake, and so much about letting go of fear. Fear was a big one. Letting go of fears, clearing it out, educating myself about a lot of things, and sitting with, some fearful emotions and moving through that.
Right.
So that's how we do it.
Right. And it's an opening. It's an opportunity
Yeah.
for us to do a lot of inside work. I'm remembering just as an aside, I was hired once by the New York Times to go to the Bronx Zoo and photograph one of the keepers of the reptile building. And in the reptile building, there was this one glass enclosed space, big one, that had many different kinds of snakes and reptiles in it that I wanted to photograph him holding them. And to do that, though, I needed to go in with him. And I remember, I don't know, I guess feeling brave, but two or three times he had to say, okay, you know, bolt for the hatch right now because they're getting nervous. We can come back in a few minutes later. And he would know when to sense that we were in danger. And but it was fascinating.
Well, so, animals are so sensitive to our emotions, aren't they? I mean, way more so than I think we are in humans, and the human animal is aware of its own emotions. And we're constantly emanating, you know, vibrations, just as all of life is, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think humans are one of the only animals who can, you know, say one thing and feel another. We have a discrepancy. We have a disconnect in us, right? And animals will see that right away. They really will.
Especially because snakes know how to be still.
They do.
In their stillness, they can focus better.
Well, they know how to be still, but they also have that really quick action too. So snakes can be fast as well. Again, there's that dichotomy with snake, isn't there? It can be very still where you're wondering, is that even alive? And it could be, I mean, if you've ever watched a snake grab prey, it's pretty amazing how fast they are.
And let's talk about how snakes represent both the masculine and the feminine.
Okay, well, what do you want to talk about with that?
Well, snakes have, I mean, they can be seen in a masculine way of their form.
Yeah. Kind of basic, right? Yeah. Again, and yet they can curl and they're very fluid and undulate. So there's a feminine aspect to it.
Exactly.
And I think that's one of the that's on a superficial level, but I think that points to one of the teachings about snake, which is bringing together that which is disconnected. I think I have a good part of a chapter in my book about bringing together, you know, what has separated kind of our inner masculine and inner feminine, where it's there's a division and there's an unwillingness to see common ground. And snake is actually a very profound teacher that way, helping to bring together that which seems disconnected. You know?
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you used to live with snakes. I don't know if you still do.
No, I no longer do, but we lived with two snakes for a couple of years. Yeah. We had a ball python and a corn snake.
And I know people in New York who also live with snakes. And I remember a couple of times this one friend asked me to go to the pet store and pick up a live, I guess, a rat or mouse. But a jumbo, the jumbo kind, because she had a big python, I guess, in her apartment, and once a month needed to feed it this large rodent, and I know you talk about it in the book too, because you don't just give it a dead rodent.
No, you have to give it live, and that's part of the part of what you need to do if you're going to live with a snake, you know, a larger snake. There's some very small snakes that you can feed crickets to and things like that, but it does need to be live. Yeah, they have a very bold relationship with their food and with the taking in of life and the letting go of life. Yeah.
Well, I think the whole animal kingdom is that way that we don't understand. They're much more comfortable with the flow of life, the going and the coming, because, you know, almost every animal has fear of predators.
Mm-hmm.
And very often they're caught by the predators and doesn't look pretty.
Right.
And I always think that as humans, when we're under that kind of suffering, we can go out of body and have a near-death mm-hmm. experience, you know, an out-of-body experience, etc. Mm-hmm. And I think probably most animals know to do that.
Some do. I've watched many mice die, you know, when they're being taken by a snake, by one of my snakes. And I have seen snakes where they just mice kind of freeze and go, if you will, out of body. There's a disconnect there and they're, you know, taken away. But I've seen others fight to the near end. So maybe it's like humans.
No, I think they can go out of body and their body fights, but their soul isn't there anymore because they're not experiencing the pain in the same way.
I don't know.
I know. We don't know until it happens. But I do have a number of friends who have had near death experiences and mm-hmm. you know, out of body, and you know, being in accidents or whatever, and all of a sudden they're seeing the accident from a distance, and their uh-huh. body is yeah. in sure. suffering, but they themselves aren't feeling that because they're separate from the body. So maybe a lot of animals know how to do that, and we just don't know that they know how to do it. So that, yeah, so we can be.
Or it could be that everyone's unique, you know. I'd be hesitant to say that myself personally, just from what I've seen, but I understand what you're saying. Maybe that's happening, and you know, we don't know. I'm not in the mouse's consciousness, so I don't know.
Right, but we can, we know that animals are very wise about life and death. That they understand, you know, the flow of, you know, it's okay to be vulnerable because, you know, a lot of them have much shorter lives anyway. And they come and go. And I think their souls are also conscious and go to another place and come back into a new life. And I'm comfortable with the joy of all animals' souls, you know, and I think a lot of them come here to be happy and to have, you know, worthy lives of, you know, squirrels loving to climb trees and jump around and gather food and, you know, enjoy being alive, you yeah. know. And
go ahead.
Yeah, but so I think it's true for all animals that they come here for a greater purpose. There's no accident. Right.
That, I think there's many ways of looking at that, and I agree with that on some levels. Yes, I totally agree with that. And I don't know. I guess I'm just thinking, Peter. The more I talk to people, you know, do animal communication talks and talk with animals and different species, the more I realize how individual it can be. You know. I think like the human animal, dog animals and horse animals and cat animals, they have their own life and it's not always joyful. Sometimes it's not joyful.
Right. Of course. You know? There's a lot of suffering.
And there's challenges. Exactly. Yeah. So I'm just reluctant to make a blanket statement about it because I just think it's very individual. We're all, you know, like we talked before here, we're all kind of at our own different levels of consciousness. So how we perceive right. is kind of dependent on that level of consciousness. And yeah, I agree with you. You can get up, you know, up to the cosmic high level of love and joy and that's all you see. So that's all you
see. Yeah, right. But and you talk to a lot of different species. And the animals you speak to of each species aren't, let's call them, of the common variety. They're a little bit more advanced in consciousness to be able to communicate with you. And just like humans are that way too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's all different levels of consciousness in the animal kingdom as well.
Yeah.
So let's come back to looking at things like the caduceus, which is for the medical world, it's the sign of...
Well, the original, you know, the original symbol was the rod of Asclepius, which is one snake climbing up a rod, and there's a story about Asclepius, who's some consider the father of modern medicine. The caduceus is the staff or the rod of Hermes or Mercury, depending on if you're going Greek or Roman, and that's a little different. It has to do with, I think, a little bit more about balancing opposites, huh? Because we see two snakes like that, whereas the rod of Asclepius is one. Then there's a whole lot of very specific symbolism we could look at there with both of those. But where did you want to go with that?
Well, no, I just wanted to see it as snakes being held in a very positive way as assisting the
Yeah. I
healing
mean, you see a
world.
snake, an image of a snake on the back of every emergency medical vehicle, right? You know, that's the symbol. You see the snake, right?
Well,
It's
I'm
kind of ironic, isn't it, that people are so afraid of snakes and yet snakes are symbolized as part of our medicine and part of healing. And yeah, that's another disconnect we have, humans have.
and then the fact that snakes shed.
Yeah. So snake is often connected with transformation because it sheds its skin. So it lets go of what's old and worn and restrictive, in order to shine, you know, who it is. It's interesting about transformation, isn't it? Because snake is always snake. You know, it's not like a caterpillar becoming a butterfly. Snake always transforms into itself, into like a new, more shiny version of itself. So I think there's a very potent medicine there for humans, kind of about letting go what's old and outdated and worn and constricting, huh? Tight and constricting, because snakes basically grow out of their skin. As they grow larger, they need to slough it off. And so there's a medicine there, if you will, about letting go, you know, letting go of petty-minded beliefs, huh? Or thoughts that are too
Yeah, we're
small,
growing out of them.
growing out of them and moving into something, and then we kind of awaken to this, you know, new version of ourself, a larger, more expansive version of ourself.
I love
So
that.
yeah.
And then what about the Ouroboros?
Ouroboros is the, you know, ancient symbol of snake eating its own tail. And there's a something about continuity. A lot of people tie that to immortality, right? The snake is kind of constantly almost eating itself in order to become itself. So there's kind of a magical, mystical power there. I'll tell you a little story about the Ouroboros, because I was thinking about that a lot for one of my later chapters, and I was looking at an old depiction of an Ouroboros, again, the snake eating its tail. And when I was looking at it, I realized it was not just a two-dimensional snake eating its tail. It was actually a portal. It was a way
What
in to
a portal.
understanding
Oh,
something
you mean
deeper.
inside
Yeah. Yeah, in
the
the
circle?
inside. Yeah. It was a portal
Oh,
into
I love that.
understanding another dimension about snake. And I do write that about that in my, I think,
Oh.
last or second to the last chapter about that.
Yeah, I love that because it's like you wouldn't think that this circle that they're creating is for us to climb through.
Yeah, to move through. To
Yeah,
move through.
I love
Yeah.
that.
I think that's the secret of snake. You know, I was talking in the beginning about how it brings together duality. That's, I think, how it does it. Is it's not by necessarily just balancing it. It's about going beyond that, going beyond duality. So you follow the portal of snake, huh? In a way. I'm speaking metaphorically here, but yeah.
And in the
Yeah.
book, you say that snakes are activators for awakening.
Yeah. Yeah, well, again, we go back to Kundalini. You know, the sleeping serpent awakens. Again, their eyes are all seeing. There's something about the snake being positioned at the third eye in the ancient Egyptian culture. Yeah, there's a lot about snake awakening our intuition, awakening our greater awareness, activating us in many ways, you know, activating us.
I
Yeah.
love that. So let's go out at the audience and find some nice snakes to play with and learn from and enjoy. And just enjoy the fact that they are so different in form from any other animal, really,
Yeah.
is an opportunity to explore something different, something new.
There you go.
And make sure if you're finding a snake to play with that you find the right kind, even though we know that only a small percentage are venomous. And they, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking, what if you get a snake bite from a non-venomous snake? It might be playful. Just like cats can do that, and they bite you and they just want to play that way.
Mm-hmm.
So this is so wonderful. You know, the whole world of snakes, that's why you wrote this book, Awakening the Ancient Power of Snake. And how can people learn more about you and all of your work?
Yeah, my website's probably the easiest way to, you know, read excerpts from my books and learn more. It's animalvoices.net.
Animalvoices.net.
Right.
And, you know, it's so fascinating when you're, let's say, designed to be able to hear animals speak to you.
Hmm.
You know, because telepathy, which is the way they communicate,
mm-hmm.
They don't need it to know English.
Right.
They communicate meaning to you,
yeah.
And your brain turns it into words.
Right. Sometimes I tell people that I'm a translator. That's what I do. Yeah.
Cause I love that, because that opens us up to, you know, the whole world of sentient beings that are conscious and have a way of communicating that, you know, I mean, there are people who talk to trees.
Right. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. No, I love it. And so I'm so happy to talk with you about snakes, because or any other animal. And we did a show originally on shadow animals.
Okay, is that where we started?
Okay. Yeah, and then we did polar bears.
Okay, and then snakes. Okay. We went backwards a little, huh? With the books.
Yeah, well, yeah. Right.
It's okay.
Yeah, no, I'm so happy to read this book. So I really suggest that the audience look for this Awakening the Ancient Power of Snake book and really climb into this magical world of snakes. So thank you again for being a guest on Energy Stew. I'm so happy to talk with you.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk with you too, as always.
Thank you. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.live. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening.